say every praise.
Wayne Shorter on tenor sax, Herbie Hancock on piano, Reggie Workman on bass, and Joe Chambers on drums. The tune is Footprints. It's from his 1967 album, Adam's Apple. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. You better free your mind Friday. The idea is that for those who are joining us perhaps for the first time, this is our dedicated open forum. There's no plan, there's no program slated, there's nothing organized. It is decided that you should have your free rein to express yourselves about things that are important to you. And hopefully you do just that. And, you know, don't just let the time be taken up with silly stuff. Talk about things that are truly important. And you take the conversation where you want it to go. That's the beauty of the station. Give you space, in my case, you get the whole program to say what it is you want to say. Hopefully it would somehow reference things that are in the news, but it doesn't have to be that way. You can also deep into your own private library and draw out something that you think would be of benefit in these times. The number is 888-874-4888 to call and to get on air. But again, you know I'm a stickler. Use your time well. And don't take us on a scenic tour. Just, you have a theme, stick with it, and see it all the way through. All right, from Chicago, Henry is starting us off on the program today.
Hey, Trees, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
We're going through this pandemic thing just like the rest of the world. We just got a news notification that the Catholic Archdiocese of Chicago has closed their schools and Mass on Sunday has been suspended. So if
you
are Catholic, yes, you are Catholic. Don't go to Mass. Now, they did say that the church is going to be open for personal prayer, but Mass will not be held at least the next two Sundays. So that's what's been going on around here. But what I wanted to free my mind on was also just recently came in. President Trump has finally declared this a national emergency.
Yes, he finally figured out that it is a national emergency.
And he could not help himself about attacking Joe Biden. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not protecting Joe Biden here or anything. But what he said in this statement, and correct me if I'm wrong, where he was talking about how Joe Biden handled the 2009 pandemic, the swine flu pandemic, and it was a pandemic at the time. But I don't remember in 2009, you know, sporting events being canceled, you know, concerts and all other type of things being canceled during that time. And I went back and checked the numbers. And according to the World Health Organization, now correct me if I'm wrong on this one, there were 6.9 million people around the world who contracted this swine flu, 113,000 cases in the United States, and 3,000 deaths that was related to this swine flu. But I don't remember all these cancellations. So, the one thing I'm thinking about is, you know, maybe they did handle this, you know, I don't know if they handled this in a manner that it should have been, but, you know, for Donald Trump to just, you know, go out of his way and to finally declare this a national emergency after all this time, it's just, I mean, it is just amazing. And you know, Utrice, I basically disagree with you on this one about Donald Trump being mentally ill. I don't think he's mentally ill. I think he's inherently evil. He has the moral character of a toilet. This dude does not care at all, and he knows exactly what he's doing. So I don't buy the mental illness capacity thing. I just think he's inherently evil. So.
Wow.
Yes, I do. And I don't normally name call like that, but this dude, like I said, he has the moral character of a toilet full of you-know-what.
Wow, Henry, you're in a bad mood today.
I mean, I just don't like the fact, I just don't like the way he's handling this whole situation.
Well, he isn't handling it, and what we are seeing, you have to look at it in this way, I would suggest. You're seeing a person of limited capacity, jammed right up to the wall, and now he's got to do something. He's got to react. And he reacts the way he normally reacts, which is he bursts out and he cusses out other people, and everything to show that he is the right guy. I am not losing my head. I'm doing my job. And all I can tell you is that no matter what you're thinking, look at the comparisons. Here's Joe Biden. He's running for president, just conveniently drawn into the conversation. But you see how bad he was, and look how good I am. I'm really taking care of business. He is, I will go back to that, he is mentally unstable in my view, as it was the view of several psychiatrists and psychologists and people who've known him for a long time, who have been around him for a long time. They all say the same thing. But we just refuse to connect it to the very serious matter of running a country. How do you run a country? People all over the country, all over the world, people have mental issues. But look at how we are treating this particular mental issue as if there's nothing wrong. And yet, you know, we could pay a pretty high price for refusing to acknowledge that something has to be done with him. He needs to be put into some kind of program, and he needs to get treatment, but that's on him. The problem is, that's on us. We're not in the streets demanding something be done with this president.
And I don't disagree with you, Yatrice. Something needs to be done with him. He needs to be thrown in a jail, just like the other criminals.
That's not going to help.
Criminal.
he needs about a good 30 years of deep treatment, and then he'll be all right. But I don't think he has 30 years.
I disagree with you. I think he's a common criminal.
Okay. You think he's a common criminal? Why would you say that?
You know what? And this is what I am, you know, doing a comparison. So, and then I hate to. Well, I'm going to bring this up because, to me, it's a racial thing, because of the fact that, you know, we always have this, you know, running joke, and I don't think it's a joke, but if Barack Obama was doing the same things Donald Trump was doing, and not to say that Barack Obama was any better, he was a little bit more mentally competent, as you say.
I'm not an Obama fan, but I could at least concede that.
Yeah, and I am. I'm not an Obama fan neither, but you know, Obama would have been impeached by now. He would have been in jail by now. They would have called him a common criminal. They would have never said that he was mentally incapacitated if he would have did the same acts that Donald Trump would have done.
But here's the point. Jail, that kind of solution isn't really a solution to the problem. He needs treatment, and he needs to be removed from the office of President of the United States. He can't handle it.
That's the main objective right there. He needs to be removed.
That's it. You know, I don't care how he gets his treatment or where he goes, but he needs to go somewhere and get treated. He is not well. And I said it, but then you have all these psychiatrists and psychologists who have since come out and said he is a danger. He is a danger to the country because he has not gone into treatment. And it's a lot of work there to undo. He's walking around with a major a container of things that need to be fixed. But the thing is, if he chooses not to get fixed, that's fine. I'm saying we have to insist that because of the position he holds, we must have some degree of faith that he is even keeled. He is not. Not in my view, and not in the view of a lot of people. There are hundreds of people who have been saying the same thing, and nothing is being done.
Well, we'll agree to disagree. We do agree that he needs to be removed, but the reasons why I think we'll disagree on.
Okay. I'll give you your disagreement points, and I'll hold on to mine. Thanks, Henry, for getting us started today. Is this L from Long Island? You're on the air. Hello, L, are you there? Okay, we move on. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Yatrice.
Hey, wonderful Harvey, what's going on?
Well, I have a prediction to do with the coronavirus.
Okay, let's hear it.
Well, you know, at the prediction is that life seems to prevail over death. It stays slightly ahead. And there was an estimated total number of people killed throughout history. They estimate, like in wars, about somewhere between, millions to a billion people. And and you know, at the end of World War II, they had something called the baby boom. And I think what happens is that when humans experience a loss in the, in our numbers, they make every effort to make up for the loss. And so I believe that because a lot of people around the world are now staying away from work and they're more or less sequestered in their homes, that there's going to be a baby boom, a planetary-wide baby boom. We're at 8 billion now, but I can see that maybe within a year, 9 months, you know, to a year, we might have another additional billion people on the planet. Even though there's going to be, you know, there's death and destruction all the time happening, I still think life seems to be stay slightly ahead of death. And even though we've been through so, you know, on the planet, there have been so many extinctions and so many, like, pandemics, epidemics, down through time, the plague, you name it. But life seems to prevail and grow. And so that's what I think will happen with the coronavirus. It'll actually accelerate the number of people on the planet, and we'll see a worldwide baby boom.
But how is it that you don't see the attendant challenge, which is, however you take it, let's say we do have a baby boom coming ahead. Do we not see, how do you not see it as a compounding or an addition of new problems to the ones that we haven't even gotten close to fixing?
It will be a problem because, you know, we're dealing with a world with scarcer resources and, you know, everything on that level. You know, the more people there are, the less space there is, the less resources, and there'll be problems. But the upside of it, I see the upside of it is that this will actually accelerate our move into space because the world will become more crowded. But at the same time, you'll have more people around, and more people means a bigger brain power. Think of us all as neurons on the surface of the world. We're all part of a big brain. And if you look at the growth of population corresponding to the growth of technology, when there was, say, 100 million people on the planet, you could have the steam engine and all those sorts of things. But it takes 8 billion people to create the internet, to create satellites, to create genetic technology and artificial intelligence. So as we grow bigger, it'll increase the brain size of the world, all made up of individuals, of course, and it'll really accelerate our move towards space. We may actually develop anti-gravity, so we won't need rockets anymore. We can just sort of float up through the atmosphere like a bubble in ginger ale. And I think it's our destiny to be galactic or intergalactic. And they say that Earth is the cradle of life, but there's a time when we get up, we grow up, and we leave the cradle. And I think that this will accelerate our move into space and living on other planets and becoming a more of a galactic species, and maybe even seeing ourselves as Earthlings instead of Americans or Russians or Chinese or anything. We'll have a new view of ourselves, and it'll take things like the coronavirus to make it happen.
Wow. Something to think about. And that's what you always do when you call in. Thank you, Harvey, for being with us today and sharing. Elle, you are back from Long Island.
Thank you for taking the call. Unfortunately, I was not able to hear Harvey's full presentation. What I want to speak on is going to be, completely off of the topic of coronavirus, but related to some degree. Just to tangent on what I did hear of Harvey's presentation, I will say this. If on Earth man, women cannot live in a harmonious mode, what justifies the movement to outer space to maybe cause the same type of horrific conditions that exist here. I think one should first concentrate on where one is and try to live with Mother Earth and honor Mother Earth, and then perhaps we will be worthy of intergalactic travel. Now, to the point that I want to make, I've heard about maybe 3 weeks ago that the assassination, the murder of El-Haj Mazlit Shabazz, there were those of us who wish to reopen and get to the truth. I also know that from history that even the death of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, that there are those of us who wish to get to the truth and reopen his case to let truth come forth. But when all of this was said, I didn't hear any one of African persuasion, and that is from Al Sharpton to Open Line or any of them, even on WBAI. Okay, I didn't hear anyone speaking to that. And I was just wondering if you could, you know, shed some light on what you feel might be the either reason or maybe the reason for opening or the reason for not opening, or have you heard through your circle of the desire to reopen the case?
Well, when you say to reopen, you are suggesting that this has been the first time people have gone that route. It's not. Secondly, people want things to be reopened because there is a natural suspicion of the government and its conclusions. And that is understandable. Mm-hmm. But things don't get done simply because people want them to get done.
Right.
You want something done, organize about it. We see no organization saying, this is what we want to get done. It takes money, it takes time, it takes personnel, none of which has been put together. So people are just talking.
Okay, may I say something?
Sure.
Make a comment? Okay. I know that Dick Gregory, before his transition, that he had basically pioneered this view, and there were others, because in his presentation there were others that rallied around it. But what I guess what I'm getting at, those who are in position, who are, for example, who have the privilege and the honor of having the airwaves for 5 or 7 days a week for whatever time period, okay, who will come on and regurgitate over matters that, yes, it affects black people, but that in which people of African descent has suffered and paid the ultimate cost in order to reach this level, that we don't go further. Now, the organizations who, I get, it's a Jewish organization that went through tracking down all of the Nazis, even going to Central America and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Beautiful. They did something because they felt a need, and they always told or spoke to their children, and if they weren't able to carry forth, their children did. So we always hear, never forget. But yet, if one were to ask the average African-American under, let's say, 25 or 30 years, They don't know any history. Fred Hampton.
Wait a minute. You're all over the place here. I'm
what
going
I'm
to
saying
the point
is
you initially made about whether there will be a reopening of these cases. And I'm suggesting to you there wasn't even an opening of these cases. And nobody proceeded beyond that point. There was
okay,
talk
then may
of
I
it.
Ask you this?
People talked about
lawyer
just a minute,
for...
let me finish. People were talking about the need for this and the need for that. I agree. There is a need. And my next point is, if you believe there is a need, fund it. Organize it. Because it's in your interest. This doesn't have anything to do with anybody. If you take it seriously enough, you will organize yourself around it. And we did not do that. We don't see evidence of that. So things don't get done simply because people have a desire that they should be done. They don't get done because people want these things to be done in the name of, you know, paying respects, due respect to our ancestors. If you believe it, if that is your value and a major value, you will actualize it. But all we get is talk. And talk doesn't get anything done. I've been saying this for years. You want something done, you actualize it. You make it happen. You organize to make it happen. And everything else walks. Everything else walks. And we have, unfortunately, a very sordid history of just talking. We talk about what should be done. We talk about what we want done, but we don't do it. Somebody else's job. It's somebody else's responsibility. It's the government that needs to put aside money to get this done. No. No. I don't accept that argument at all. It isn't an argument, but it has been consistent in our history that people just talk. They talk. If I asked every African American person, put $5 in a communal pot every month, you think that would happen?
That, you trees. Or shall you cut me off?
No, I'm not. I'm listening to you.
Oh, thank you. Number one, what I'm going to say is this. You said we should act. Mumia Abu-Jamal is in jail. We act. Ramona Africa, Pam Africa, and many of us who march, who take action, who give money, who buy books. But what I'm saying, those who are in the position to highlight those who are out in the street, they don't do it. That
but
is my point.
Here's the issue again. You see it? I appreciate your vantage point, but it is nonetheless limited because you don't see the whole picture. People want you to talk about them, but they're not doing what is supposed to be the newsworthy factor here. They're not doing it. They want you to talk about it. They want you to pick up the mantle and ride with it as some kind of leader of a movement. I'm not a leader of a movement. I am not a leader of a movement. I would cover it when you have achieved a significant a significant mark, sure, but this is a problem, and it has to be appreciated. My job is not to lead movements. I talk about things, but I'm not a leader of a movement. The people are supposed to be in charge of that. And again, I've been in this business for almost 50 years. And it's the same cycle all over again. People want coverage. But, okay, what are you doing? And you find out they're not doing anything but talking. Am I to be co-opted into that? No, it's not going to work. I'm not going to be co-opted. When you're doing legitimate work, and I'm not saying that you have to have these spectacular results. I know what struggle is. But most of what I object to is people who are not genuinely involved in struggle, but want to be known as genuinely involved in struggle. And when you ask for the particulars, when I go to the average person who's heading up some effort and is talking about how national it is, and I ask to see the addresses of all the places that they have been established, you can't get that. You don't get that. You don't get the particulars. You're supposed to fall for what they say. I'm not one of those. So if there is a desire on the part of many members of a community all over the country, or maybe in one place, and they want to achieve something, let us break the cycle and actually produce results. And actually show a plan, and actually show where you are with respect to your plan. I don't fall for talking. Talk, you can walk right out the door with that talk. Doesn't mean anything to me. Show me where you have achieved objectives, however small. What's significant? Show me where you've done that. And, you know, I'll be interested. But until then, you're just part of the continuum of people just talking. They've not achieved anything, but they're talking. I can't go for that. I'm too old. Thanks for calling in and contributing today. Okay, Randolph from Canada, you're on the air.
Well, hello, are you, Teresa. I wanted to answer your question yesterday. You asked, what can we do now about the elections? It was interesting because right after your program, Ralph Nader had Robert Greenwald, a producer of a film, talking about suppressed. The fight to vote, in which he went through really what is going on. I was astonished to learn that 17,000 potential voters have been eliminated from the electoral rolls. And there is something I thought about. The voters count, but they don't really count because they have very little invested in the election. The people who have the power behind, and this is in all countries, the people who have the power behind the key results and the power are those who actually count the vote, those who set up the polling stations and those who decide whether you can get in or you cannot. Until that situation, the people are willing not only to vote, which is important, but it actually controlling the vote, actually count, making sure that the vote is honest and it counts. Until that is done, all kinds of terrible things, like Robert Greenwell said, suppressed the right of vote to vote. He has a film, and it's free to see. And he gives, and so does Ralph Nader give. And I was amazed that the justice system. You know what bothers me? People who fight for their rights are nonviolent. Generally, they are nonviolent, and yet the authorities use vast violence to suppress the rights that every person has. This is, I mean, people don't seem to, it's as if people who want to express their freedoms are an enemy and are treated as such. Although, only look at China. They waited 88 days before they dispersed the demonstrators. And they changed their entire system because of what the students did. They had respect for the people and their right. And would you imagine a communist country doesn't attack its own citizenry, doesn't use violence until 88 days? So that's all I have to say. Please, for the rebuttal.
Here's my response to that. Everything you said was made abundantly clear all the way back to the 1920s about the rights of black voters and voters of color in the United States. This is not new. People have paid awful prices for affirming what they thought would be their natural rights. But here in the United States, by then there were natural rights or natural law, which was for whites, and then came the sticky matter of, well, what else, how else could we accommodate anybody? Everybody who had rights was white. Everybody who was not white had no rights. So we had to wait for constitutional rights. But in the meantime, no voting for decades and decades and decades. You talk to people of color in the United States, you get an entirely different history. And that is one of the things that I caution about modern day historians who correctly are presenting modern history. I'm referring now to Greenwald's efforts to alert the United States that what we automatically consider as our rights had never, ever, ever been meant to be applied to people who were not white in this country. This is a long story. So I'm glad that he caught on. I'm glad that this is an issue that is being raised. But you talk to African American scholars and they tell you, what's new? This has been happening for a long time. The subject really comes down to natural rights as opposed to permitted rights. In all of this discussion, it is not to be assumed that black people, Latinos, Asians, have natural rights. They never did. They never were given permission to avail themselves of their natural rights. The fights all along the way, up until this day, has been to find a way to take more and more of what they consider to be natural rights from the people who insist you have none. You want rights, you go to the court and wage a battle for decades because you have no rights. You still have no rights, even while you're fighting in court. This is the dichotomy that we have always lived with in the United States. It hasn't gotten any better today. Remember that. Natural rights for all white people. And then there are negotiated rights for everybody else. It is not to be assumed that everybody has rights or that everybody has the same rights. Not at all. That's a big unsolved problem in the United States. Thanks for calling in. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air. Okay, we move along. Jay from New York, you're on the air. Okay. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved.
Hello.
And my beloved. Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you too, Willie.
And good afternoon to our family. Listen, Yatrice, I just want to thank you and I honor the work and respect the work that you're doing. And I really do. And but I have a little criticism to make. Listen, in my judgment, and I'm sitting in one of the finest classrooms in the world. But some of your students, they're very unruly, disruptive, and argumentative, because what I think we have to do is to listen, and then go do the homework. The homework is to re-listen again to brother you and brother all of these fine people, teachers. So, you know, if you listen a second time and take notes, you will get it. Because I know you sometimes go above our heads. You see what I'm saying? So that is my little criticism. I may not be saying it the way I should, because I'm not like Sister Leona and Sister Patricia. I love those two, Harvey and Brother E. They're very articulate. I'm not that. But at least you have allowed me to have a working brain again. And thank you for the
Me too. I have a working brain as a result of constant contact with this audience. People are really getting into the idea of exchanging information and testing each other's ground. I love it. I love it. I think it increased my longevity by at least 2.5 years.
No, well, you're one of the finest among us, with Garvey and all of them. You're in that category.
Put me there.
No. May I finish? We have a tendency of not recognizing and appreciating the fine ones among us until after they're gone. I'm telling you this. If you could find anyone, point me to one that you do not qualified with that went before. I'm not asking you. because I know you have a way of knocking people out while they're still wide awake and not knowing they're knocked out. So I'm not asking, I'm just throwing that out there. But you're one of the finest among us, my sister.
Well, I thank you so much for that. But I tell you, right back at you, I see the audience as a fantastic resource for all of us because people make a sincere effort to exchange information, to engage each other, and to think out loud. This is extraordinary because it doesn't happen normally. People don't want to put themselves out there. They feel uncomfortable about it. They don't want exposure. They want to think their private thoughts. But this give and take is what really gets to me, that people should feel comfortable, even if they feel vulnerable, because I feel vulnerable too. And if we can get the courage to just say, we're just talking with each other, I think that's the greatest thing, the greatest tribute you could pay to a program like this. But I thank you. I thank you so much for what you say. It cheers me up. So I feel good about that. Thank you. Thank you so much, Willie, for calling in today. So, Matt, you're back.
Yeah, I was there. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, okay. Greetings to the beloved family. First of all, there's an old saw. You both were right. So we have a criminal in the White House, and he's obviously a 12-year-old that has grown old. So there are some arrested development and other issues there. But I want to say something on the this coronavirus. I hadn't heard about the emergency declaration, but one interesting aspect is on October 9th of last year, I was writing an email to Gary, to our Gary, and I was telling him about an astrologer. I think the name was William Kinsey, something like that. And he was talking about this time of year, of the aspect saying of what he called the black swan / X event. So here we are with coronavirus, and I mean, Trump himself was also a black swan event too, but here we are. And just to give some update, Trump and Pence need to be, to get the test that everybody else is waiting for to be rolled out, because the Brazilian president, the fascist in Brazil, Bolsonaro, he actually tested positive, the press secretary, and Trump has insisted on using his Mar-a-Lago facility, which is like a public kind of a place, right?
He got it supposedly there.
Yeah, exactly.
But, Bolsonaro's son has come out and said his father doesn't have the coronavirus.
Symptoms. He might mean symptoms because there's some incubation period. Okay, and plus you can pass it on even if you're not personally affected. So this fool that's in the White House, he's exposed himself at the conservative conference. He also was, in fact, some of those same Republicans, they actually self-quarantined, right? So Trump is out on a limb, no question about it. And I have to maybe disagree rarely with Harvey, because yes, there will be a lot of babies, but we need to think about how many people are going to die. The UK PM came out and said that 80% of his people are going to be affected, and it's a pretty high mortality rate. rate. So if there's a lot of new babies made, they might, you know, there might be a lot of people that will die. And I'm not being alarmist, but this is a black swan event, no question about it.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You put us on alert. So we have to remember that when things go left, not in the ideological sense, but in the sense of right and wrong, we'll keep that in mind. Thanks so much. Let's see. We have Jay from New York. You're back.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, I'll be real quick because I know time is of the essence. I would first like to say I hope that everyone out there in the audience is safe. I would also like to say, you know, Utrice, it seems to me that you are aging gracefully. Because I remember, you are, and I'm going to tell you why.
You haven't seen me up close, that's why you're saying
I'm going to tell you why. Because I remember back in the day when I first heard you on the radio, which I always have a smile on my face, how if a caller called you like yesterday and behaved in the manner in which she behaved yesterday, she would get it lovely. So that's why I say you're aging gracefully, because you basically spared her, as they say back in the day, the rod. She didn't get the rod. But the reality is this. We have a lot of people in this country who believe that what this guy in the White House is doing is legitimate, and we should give him the opportunity and the chance to take us into the bits. And I say no. It is quite obvious, but what he has been doing shows that he's inept and capable and not worthy of even having the job. Now, how do you, as a so-called leader of a country, try to blame a previous president for something that happened 4 or 5 years ago? You know, and then to try to equate it with the person that you're running against, maybe. This is just atrocious. For someone to act and behave in the manner that he has, and then to find out he has held up certain things that needed to be in place in regards to this coronavirus in hopes that it would help him become reelected. I just hope that the media puts that out there in the fashion in which the American people, and especially people like the one who called up yesterday, will be able to wake up and see the harm that this man is doing to this country because of his mental illness. Because
thank you for that, and thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it. I want to say thank you to everybody, as I always say. This is our program. We share this space. And I like the idea that we do it purposefully, sharing information. We could disagree, as we regularly do, but we have matured to the point where we could understand that that is a genuine position a person holds. You have a genuine position. Let's talk it through and see if anybody changes his or her mind. But thank you for the sincerity of effort and for keeping a standard to the program that I think we should hold on to for a long time. We'll see each other on Monday, God willing, and the creek don't rise. And guess what? Surround yourselves with people who add good dimension to your life, and walk away from the rest. We'll see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.